seated, please.
Next argument is 10-0491, Hart's Bluff Game Ranch, Inc. versus the State of Texas and the Texas Water Development Board.
May it please the court, Mr. Jacobson will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This case presents the court with the question of whether the state and federal constitutions provide a property owner a remedy when the state uses its sovereign powers to manipulate the marketplace to the state's benefit and to the detriment of its owners. The cases of this court and other Supreme Courts in other states have consistently allowed that remedy to exist. The state here has argued, and will probably argue again, that its actions are justified because the Marvin Nichols Reservoir in Northeast Texas is critical to its plans to supply water to the Dallas-Fort Worth area for the next 50 years. And while that is certainly an explanation for why the state did what it did, it is not an excuse for what the state did. My client had plans to develop a mitigation bank. It's an environmentally friendly, it's a value-enhancing and socially responsible use of property. My clients did due diligence before they bought the property. My clients had the assurances from the Corps that there was no legal impediment to them buying the property before they bought the property. And when the state learned that a mitigation bank might exist within the footprint of Marvin Nichols Reservoir, the state became concerned because in a mitigation banking situation, the interests of the federal government under the Clean Water Act become part of the property. The property becomes deed restricted and gives the Corps of Engineers substantial rights in the property to enforce either a conservation easement or alternatively a deed restriction. And so the state was very, very, very worried that the federal interest in this particular mitigation bank would preempt any effort in the future to make Marvin Nichols a state water supply strategy.
Would it?
Great question. In the City of Dallas versus Hall case, where there was a conservation, a wildlife conservation easement in Cherokee County in Lake Fasterell, essentially there, the U.S. Supreme Court eventually heard arguments on it. The argument was never heard whether or not the preemption did actually exist. And under the Rapanos case, which is cited by both the state and us in our briefs, there is an argument, a potential argument, that a federal interest might or might not preempt the state's right to control its own waterways. But regardless of whether it did or not, what the state did here was use its sovereign power, power only the state has in the marketplace, to create the result that it desired. And that result was to not to take the chance that preemption might exist. And the state's brief is remarkably candid about this point. On page 4 of its merits brief, the state says that Marvin Nichols is a critically needed piece of infrastructure.
Well, why isn't that a huge part of this case? I mean, we've seen just recently drought and fires, and the water resource is becoming much more critical for the state of Texas. And isn't that the purpose of a sovereign power, to protect the state and its citizens in the use of a critical resource like this?
It can certainly be a consideration and should be. But if the state wants to use my client's property for a purpose, property the state does not own, then the state ought to pay for it when it keeps my client from developing its property in a responsible way. The other half of the need for the sovereign power to develop the state water plan is the talisman, the foundational principle in takings cases. And that is, in fairness and justice, who should bear the burden of the state's action? Should it be the individual landowner who's forced to forego its own socially responsible and environmentally friendly and very profitable use of the property? Or should the burden be borne by the state?
Did the state here do anything other than announce an intention to condemn land at some point in the future?
Much more. Prior to the letter that my clients received denying the mitigation banking permit, the state sponsored a site protection, a reservoir site protection study, which isn't so much, but the state also, for the first time, included in its region seawater plan a unique reservoir site designation for Marvin Nichols, and the Texas Water Development Board had approved that designation prior to the denial of the permit. They went from simply suggesting that at some point in the future a water supply reservoir might be there, and there are hundreds in state water plans going back 40 years. Here, the state took the step to actually put its footprint in the law, saying we're going to have a water supply reservoir here. Don't grant this mitigation banking permit. And under the Corps' mitigation banking criteria, what that meant was there might come a time when the mitigation bank might be under 60 feet of water. And so the state declined to issue the permit.
Could
You mean
Hart's Bluff still?
Excuse me, the court.
Could Hart's Bluff still prevail if we uphold the directness requirement in the Court of Appeals opinion?
I think that the Court of Appeals opinion misunderstands the directness requirement. The Court of Appeals opinion concedes that the state's actions were the factual cause of the taking, and they have to do that because that's the way we pled it, and it's also the truth. The Court of Appeals then creates something heretofore unknown in Texas law, a legal cause or an ultra vires exception, which is not part of Texas law. Consistently in the cases this court has reported, it's a factually driven element. Did these states' actions, were they the producing cause, the proximate cause, did it result in the taking? And then this court in Bigger has already essentially found the same thing. In Bigger, the city of Austin issued a site development plan, and that was the value-enhancing additive to that property. Here, the value-enhancing additive is, of course, the mitigation-making permit.
What was Hart's Bluff's vested property right?
Every property right you can own under our Constitution.
What was the vested property right at issue here? There was never a permit issued by the Corps, and only the Corps could issue the permit.
Only the Corps can issue the permit, no question about it.
Obviously, Hart's Bluff bought the property, owned the property, had rights in the property. What was the vested right that the state interfered with?
To develop its property in any legally permissible way that the law allowed. That is what property is all about.
But that's what the Court of Appeals called merely a tortious interference court action.
Again,
the interference with your right to develop your property.
The interference here wasn't tortious, it was constitutional.
Well, that's your view. The Court of Appeals viewed it a little
differently. I understand. And the way the case was pleaded, of course, is that the state's sovereign powers were the factual cause of the permit denial.
Which goes to Justice Wainwright's question, what was the vested right taken or affected?
My client's ability to develop its property as a mitigation bank, much like any other property owner in Texas, has the ability to develop its property in any legally permissible way that's not restricted.
But in this case, you could only develop it with a permit from the Corps for a mitigation bank.
And
if you had a mitigation bank permit and that was interfered with, destroyed, obviously that would be a vested right, the permit, and the ability to develop the mitigation bank. I'm just trying to focus in the inquiry. There was never a permit from the Corps issued. So what's the vested right?
The vested right...
Since you can't develop the mitigation bank until you have the permit.
It's fee simple title. There are a number of Federal Circuit cases that talk about this concept where arguments are made regarding you don't have the permit, so you don't have a vested property right taken. And the response of the Federal Circuit, which deals with a lot of these questions a lot of the time, is essentially it's anomalous to argue that you don't have the right until it's granted. Instead, what you look at are the foundational facts through a Penn Central or a Lucas analysis under the U.S. Constitutions. They don't let the fact that a permit hasn't been given yet stop the landowner from prevailing in an inverse condemnation case. And in the City of Teague case, or even Biggers case for that matter, the landowners in Biggers didn't have the right to their site development plan development until they got the easement swap.
The record and the pleading seem to suggest that Hart's Bluff bought the property with knowledge that a state agency might somehow interfere with its permitting process. Do you dispute that?
I think what Hart's Bluff did was do its due diligence with the Corps to understand whether or not a potential future development might impede the granting of a mitigation making permit. And the status of the state's involvement at that time in this particular project was such that the Corps would not deny a permit based upon a state water plan that had been around for 40 years.
But there was knowledge that a state agency had the ability to step in and thwart the permitting process.
Thwart wouldn't be the way I'd put it. I think the way I would put it would be the state had the ability at some point in time to certainly develop a reservoir. And if the state wants to do that, it needs to pay for the right to have done it. What the state's doing here now is controlling the development of my client's property, property it doesn't own, without buying it.
Could the Corps have granted the permit notwithstanding the state's opposition to it?
The Corps does have discretion to grant or deny permits. I think the court's fear was that ultimately the preemption issue might in fact go in favor of the state, and then the Corps would be faced with a situation where a water development site would be sitting on top of the mitigation bank. And so the Corps declined to grant it.
And the Corps was considering the request, delayed it several times, and it was your client that pushed for an immediate decision, correct?
I think what actually happened was the Corps offered my clients the opportunity to determine, to wait and see whether or not the unique reservoir site designation actually made it into the state water plan.
But then you, but your client, as I understood the record, objected and said, no, we want a decision now.
We've been waiting 2 years. We'd like a decision from the Corps. Please tell us what happened. But my clients also went back to the Corps and afterwards asked the Corps to reconsider for one reason, to ripen the claim also, and to make sure that the Corps had every fact it needed to understand in order to grant or deny the permit. So my clients went back again and even asked whether or not a mitigation banking site could actually be moved, trying to accommodate the state's interests and its own. And the Corps said, no, we're worried about this mitigation banking site being under 60 feet of water. Therefore, we're going to deny your permit.
You don't claim that every Section 16051 designation is a taking?
No, do not claim that. And in fact, I think the...
So how do you distinguish between this designation and all the other ones?
In this particular case, what the Corps did, what the state did, resulted in a current direct restriction on my client's property. And I think that's the key distinction. That idea exists in the case law already. Certainly, farmers are still farming land out there, and the fact that the site is a unique reservoir site hasn't stopped anything in the real world. That's why I think the decisions of this court looking at an ad hoc, fact-based analysis are so important. Here, it was a sovereign act of the state that caused the current direct restriction, and that's the distinguishing factor.
Lucas talks about denying all economically beneficial or productive use of the land.
Yes, sir.
Are you claiming that Hart's Bluff has been denied all economically beneficial and productive use, or just what you had hoped to use it for?
That's an interesting question, and I appreciate that because I couldn't get the Court of Appeals to even address the federal claims, for example, Lucas. If you'll read some of the Supreme Court cases after Lucas, there's some discussion about whether the forceful rhetoric of all economically viable use of the property is what it appears to be. There's a case that came out of, I believe, the Dallas court, City of Sherman versus Wayne, that does some analysis about whether or not a property has lost all economically viable interest. We would claim that, but also understand that the property does have some potential uses, but the uses of the property that are there now are uses that wouldn't justify the amount of money my client paid for the property or the amount of money that my client put into the property to make it a mitigation bank. So we would be a net loser at this point in time under a Lucas analysis.
But again, you bought the property knowing that an agency could at some point step in and deprive you of your hoped for use for the property.
What we bought was a piece of property that had been in state water plans for 40 years and had never been acted upon. And it would be very unfair and unjust if every property owner in the 113 or 115 reservoir sites in Texas was charged with the knowledge that at some point in time in the future, there might be a reservoir site there, and so they couldn't develop their property in ways that might conflict with the state's rights. If the state wants to do that, the state needs to pay for the right to control the property.
There are going to be many examples where the federal government or an agency asks the state for its opinion on matters like this. And what you're saying is the state can't give its recommendation or evaluation without thinking that the next thing that's going to happen, you know, if we recommend denial, is there's going to be a lawsuit against the state for an improper taking.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when the state's actions and the use of its sovereign power, power that nobody else in the marketplace has, results in a current direct restriction, there ought to be recovery.
What power was exercised by the state?
The state legislature declared Marvin Nichols to be a unique reservoir site, put it in the state water plan. The development board actually approved the Region C water plan. Those are things that only the state can do. No other landowner has those powers.
But how did that control the federal government, the Corps' action?
The Corps was worried that there might be a reservoir.
How did it control the Corps' determination on whether to grant the permit?
It forced the Corps to conclude that the mitigation banking site might not exist in perpetuity.
Well, back to my original question. So the Corps had no discretion after the state made its determination here to grant the permit?
The Corps might have had discretion, but the discretion is somewhat illusory. There's never been a mitigation banking permit in the nation denied except for this one. And the Corps is in the business of promoting mitigation banking.
Let me ask you, what if you were successful and you received it damages and then the legislature amended the law so that the property was no longer designated a unique reservoir site? Then what?
I've alleged a temporary taking claim if in fact that happened before we actually got to a trial on the merits and an evaluation decision. Mm-hmm. So I've actually thought about that could happen, mm-hmm. but as a practical matter, that's the kind of situation that really cries out for constitutional protection. My client has been forced to forego a valuable, environmentally responsible use of its property. And if the state were to change its mind in 5 or 10 years, we've been denied the right to develop our property.
Are there zoning law cases that would be analogous to this situation?
There might be some zoning cases that could be analogous, but neither side has tried to analogize it to a zoning situation. But I could see a situation where if a state zoned a particular area in a certain way, for example, the city of Houston versus McGuire oil case that this court just denied petition for last week. There, the city of Houston had an ordinance that said you can never develop an oil and gas well within so many feet of our water supply, and that was found to be a taking. So certainly zoning cases, especially zoning cases that preclude development, can in fact be analogous to our situation.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. D'Andrea will present argument for the respondents.
May it please the court. What plaintiffs are advocating would allow environmentalists to use federal preemption to shut down any controversial public works project. The state must be able to truthfully communicate with the federal government concerning its critical infrastructure needs. Without the bright line rule in Westgate, planners would be forced to keep their project secret instead of encouraging public debate, and they would be prevented from evaluating all the various options for risk of incurring takings liability for every site that they propose. There is no regulatory takings in this case because Hart Bluff cannot show that it is suffering any restriction on its property's use.
Well, it didn't get the permit.
It's not a permit, Your Honor.
It didn't get the
contract. It didn't get a contract.
Didn't get the contract
with the federal government. Right. And so what is it being stopped to do? The contract works like this. A mitigation contract with the federal government is a deal between the landowner and the Corps. And what the contract says is the landowner will create a conservation easement, setting aside its land in perpetuity forever to compensate for wetlands. And in exchange, the landowner will get mitigation banking credits from the federal government, which the landowner can then sell to developers. So all it lost was that contract.
And you agree that the state caused the loss?
The state, I think for the purpose of this appeal, we have to agree with that.
The brief is a little ambiguous, but...
We ask them to. We don't agree that we have any power over the Corps to do that. Now, I think they've let... What we asked the Corps was to please site your habitat for migratory waterfowl somewhere else. Now, whether that please had an influence on the Corps, I think we have to accept for the purposes of the appeal that a factual matter did. But we disagree that the Corps had discretion to deny it. And what they denied was just a contract. Because even today, if Hart's Bluff wanted to, they could build the Hart, put hardwood trees in the land, and create a conservation easement. And they could sell that conservation easement
to
the Sierra Club.
Has the Corps denied any other mitigation banking credit, to your knowledge?
They have suggested the Corps has not. That is not, I don't have any. I'll point you to this. There is, commentators have called the Corps' process in this granting the mitigation permit lengthy bureaucratic labyrinth, and they have criticized the uncertainty in the process because any member of the mitigation banking review team can deny one of these contracts for any reason.
Can a labyrinth still be ministerial?
Of course, at the end
of all that kind of agony, can it still be ministerial?
I suppose it could, but I would point this is a commentator in 81 Iowa 565, and there they suggest and list several instances where these have been denied.
Do you dispute that the denial is traceable to the actions of the state?
I think, again, for the purposes of this appeal, they have alleged that we have influenced them. So I think certainly that was our purpose in asking them not to do it. But what's important is the state has no power, not just no power to issue this mitigation banking contract. The state wasn't even using its eminent domain authority here because the state has no cannot threaten the federal government with eminent domain.
Well, on the one hand you say you can't, but on the other hand you say you did. And so you know, it's sort of irrelevant whether you can or not if, in fact, you did, which is what you thought you were doing and hoped you would do.
I think, Your Honor, I think what we thought we were doing is saying, pretty please, don't locate that here because we need this land for a reservoir. And if you put a reservoir here, we will not be able to condemn it. This isn't a matter of the state not paying for it. Paying for this land would never have been an option. If a federal mitigation bank went in on this critically important site, that would be the end of it. Through federal preemption, the state would never be allowed to build Marvin Nichols there. So it's not a matter of paying.
If there were a municipal authority there and you asked them not to approve a subdivision because you're thinking about building a reservoir, wouldn't that be a taking?
That would be I agree that would be a much more difficult case. It would depend in part on how much authority we have over that municipality. Right. Well, even with no zeros, I can imagine under Westgate it would not, because, well, it depends on what the municipality denied. But say they denied the same thing, a contract here. Under Westgate, it still wouldn't be, because there's no current direct restriction. What Westgate says is it's got to be an actual physical or legal restriction on the property's use. And there's nothing restricting
it. If you went in and said, you know, if there was a subdivision out here, it's going to impede our plans, we're not ready yet to, so don't approve this subdivision, we're not sure what we're going to do yet. And the county said, or the city, probably the city, okay, we won't. It seems to me that's pretty clearly a taking.
I think, Your Honor, I could imagine an exception to Westgate along the lines of if the state uses a threat of eminent domain to scuttle a deal, right? And maybe that would be a taking if, I mean, there they are actually restricting the land's use. They're applying for a subdivision and we're saying no.
Let me ask you, if this decision stands, isn't it going to encourage the government to take different types of actions to lower the value of property that it later intends to condemn? I mean, is that a possible result?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Westgate leaves open the possibility of a claim that the state has acted in bad faith and used its power of eminent domain, has threatened the use of eminent domain. So say this weren't the federal government, say it were a third party. A third party wanted to enter into a contract with Hart's Bluff to develop the land in some way. And the state went to that third party and said, if you do that, if you sign that contract, we're going to condemn this in 10 years. Now, I could imagine that under Westgate, that wouldn't be enough because there wasn't a direct restriction on the land yet. There's just a threat of eminent domain. But I could imagine an exception to Westgate that said, look, a bad faith threat of eminent domain could be actionable as a regulatory takings. But here, there's no threat of eminent domain because we can't threaten the federal government. We're not trying to avoid paying them. We're trying to avoid this project being shut down altogether. But there's no cloud of condemnation.
You had a specific intent to preclude something, and it was going to have a detrimental effect on these. I mean, you specifically intended to do that. And eminent domain, it seems like, you know, whether we call it a suggestion or a right of eminent domain or a bad faith or anything else, you did specifically intend to affect these people's property. And you're the government.
We specifically intended for the federal government not to sign a contract with them.
Well, but you intended to try to prevent that.
To prevent a contract, we did.
Yeah, that was the whole purpose.
The state and parties all the time specifically intend to prevent other parties from signing contracts.
And you knew it would detrimentally affect their property values and what they were trying to do if you were successful in getting the federal the Corps not to issue the permit.
I think I disagree that we were trying to affect their property's value.
Well, no, not that you, but you knew it was going to.
It's not terribly clear. This is just one deal. This is one possible deal of a contract they could have done. They can still do the conservation easement. There's nothing they have alleged that they can't do tomorrow. They can still create a conservation easement.
That's blanking reality. I mean, these people had to have the permit bank and all of that to make their financial plan work, didn't they?
No one has denied them any permits. They keep calling it a permit to make it sound like a land use permit, but it's
not. Can they do the mitigation banking, sell those credits now?
No, they can't. That's a federal program, so they can't participate.
Certainly, the state was aware of what was going on out there when they took this action, intending to keep them from doing what they wanted to do, and it was going to affect them financially. The state had all of that knowledge and the specific intent to prevent it.
Your Honor, we knew it would be. Our intent was to make sure that the feds did not go in and create some kind of permanent, long-term bank that we could then never condemn.
But even if they have, other alternatives, that seems to me to go to the merits of the taking claim, whether they can actually prove a regulatory taking, interference with reasonable investment-backed expectations, economic deprivation, all that.
Yes, you're right, Your Honor. That would, I mean, this is three levels down in the argument, but you're right. If the court first overruled Westgate, or at least created a big exception to it, and then said, even that aside, even the fact that the state had no authority over the federal government, you could still, then if we got down to Lucas, where it was all economic viability, you're right. That would be, that's the jury question, is all economic viability here? What are their investment-backed expectations? And then, of course, we would say they haven't taken all economic viability because they could still create a conservation easement. They could sell it to the Sierra Club instead of the federal government, and maybe they'd pay a little less because they're not the federal government, but then we could actually condemn it one day, which would be the benefit to us. I'd like to address the designation in the state water plan because that's the only real legislative act that they've pointed to. And I'd like to say the designation in the state water plan is it's an incredibly mild statute. All that designation does is put legislative imprimatur on this 2007 state water plan, and it designates every one of the reservoirs in there as potential reservoir sites. And the statute itself, and the only restriction it is that once you're designated, the only effect of that is that local and governmental entities and state agencies cannot buy land in there that would affect the reservoir.
And I don't understand that. I agree with you that doesn't seem like much of a restriction because if it was a state agency, it looks like the state would just tell them not to, and that would be the end of it.
Well, it's to let the left hand know what the right is doing, Your Honor. I think it's just to make sure that, you know, we don't have to send an email to everyone. It's very small, and it's not meant to be anything more than that. It was just forever the Water Development Board was issuing these state water plans, and they kept asking the legislature, please just acknowledge them. And this is all it is some acknowledgement to prevent state agencies from interfering. And that same statute actually encourages development. There's one of the provisions in there, subsection I, says that it allows municipalities and state agencies to acquire land and easements if it's done for the purpose of providing retail public utility service to the property in the reservoir site or allowing the owner of a property in the reservoir site to improve or develop the property. So that designation actually considers the fact that these reservoirs may never get built. If they are, it's 50 years out. And so that you should encourage some development there. And the state really has no problem with this sort of development. Our only problem is to make sure that when there's some kind of controversial project like this on the outskirts of town, that environmental groups can't come in, apply to the feds, get some kind of mitigation bank there or wildlife refuge,
we all know and understand what your purpose was in doing this. Why not just condemn the property and instead of going through this exercise? And because you are impacting landowner rights.
We can't if the federal government creates.
So instead of writing this letter, why not condemn the property? It's not condemned now, right?
It's not, and it may never.
It may never be, and so they're left hanging in the wind. So why not just go through the formal condemnation process?
I mean, I guess what that would be, Your Honor, the result of that, Your Honor, would be every time the federal government, and like here, the Corps said, open for notice and comment. Does anyone have any objections to someone putting a mitigation bank here? And that's what we responded to. Yes, we do. And that's what they allege is the taking. Now, the response you're suggesting, Your Honor, is that we could have said, yes, we do, we condemn this property. But that forces the state's hand. There are several options where we might put a reservoir. It's a multi-billion dollar project. We might not begin construction for another 10 or 15 years. So every time the federal government then proposed one of these things, we would have to rush in and start condemning all the land in the footprint where it's proposed.
Or else decide that you didn't want it after all.
That's right. But what Westgate requires is Westgate allows us to make those sort of public planning decisions and to make announcements.
Allow you to hold the decision open indeterminately.
Well, what Westgate says, Westgate actually forecloses the idea that we could be liable for unreasonable delay, but it doesn't let us do it interminably. First of all, the state water code says that this designation expires in 2015. But even if you could somehow convince the legislature to keep renewing this, Westgate does leave open the idea that you could go to trial on the idea of did the state act in bad faith to unreasonably delay and to cause economic harm. Now, I don't think that exception applies here, first, because they haven't alleged unreasonable delay. Quite the opposite. They said that once they bought this land a few years ago, we accelerated our efforts. And even then, that bad faith exception should only apply to to private third parties. It should only apply when the state actually threatens the use of eminent domain, when there's a cloud of condemnation. And there can't be a cloud of condemnation in this case, because the state cannot condemn federal land. It's simply a preemption problem.
Counsel, perhaps even the implications of finding a taking here are even broader than what you state. Like almost any regulatory takings case, this one is difficult, otherwise it wouldn't be here. But the legislature says the Water Development Board has to develop plans for providing water to a huge state. Many, many people, tremendous commerce, and the state designates potentially hundreds of reservoir locations, trying to plan for the future. Many of these reservoirs may never happen, some will. But the state is trying to plan when it has no control over how much rain there will be, how much rain there will not be, where the fires will be, no control over nature while trying to plan water for this tremendous use in this state. At the same time, they're private property owners who are trying to develop their land. Certainly, the people of Texas would want the state to try to plan for water usage for the state, as the chief pointed out, most particularly when there are tremendous droughts like we're suffering through now. So the state seems to be kind of in a difficult situation. Plan, prevent ideas, locations for these hundreds of potential reservoirs. Private property owners have rights in their properties. But if the state plans or designates some of its planning, then there's a takings claim, potentially for hundreds of reservoir sites. Not just for mitigation banks, but for potentially many, many other uses
for highways,
that private property owners may want to put that property to. So it's a tough case. Do you think that it would be right for the citizens of Texas to hold that this can never be a taking?
No,
this
Your Honor.
Situation.
I think this situation, because the federal government's involved, I think should, as a matter of law, not be a taking, for two reasons. Because we can't threaten them with eminent domain. So this is clearly a case of the state saying, please, not threatening.
So the key distinction is the Corps was the decision maker.
I think that's right. The key distinction is the federal government, the Corps was the decision maker. That's one reason it shouldn't be. And the other is just we should be allowed to have truthful notice and comment to the federal government about our infrastructure needs. Now, the situation you've described, where there's this careful balance between the state's need to list a bunch of places and the fact that we need, the state wants to encourage development in all these places, and I think the statute tries to do that. Now, if there were a situation where the Texas Water Development Board, there were a subdivision that might go up, or some private deal, and the Texas Water Development Board targeted them and tried to scuttle that deal with the threat of eminent domain, that's real cloud of condemnation, because that's a threat of condemnation. Now maybe you'd have to create an exception to Westgate, I think, because there's no current direct restriction there. The state hasn't done anything to restrict the land. It's just scuttled a deal, but I could imagine such an exception existing. And that might be one way to balance the fear, but that hard question isn't in this case, because here there's just no threat of condemnation because of the federal government. No further questions, though.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
If I can respond briefly, the notion that a mitigation bank does not involve a permit, how that got into this record is mystifying to me. Attached as exhibit number one to the petition, our reply to the response to petition for review is a copy of Nationwide Permit 27. Nationwide Permit 27 says specifically this NWP, it's a Corps of Engineers permit, can be used to authorize compensatory mitigation projects, including mitigation banks. So how the idea that there's no permit here, it's mystifying to me. But even it's a red herring.
What's your response to it's a no taking as a matter of law because the federal government's involved?
I think that the cases of this court in the past have allowed recovery where a property owner can show that a sovereign right that's exercised by the state that results in a current direct restriction, however you want to call it, an easement swap and bigger, whatever you want to say about it, if it results in a current direct restriction of a landowner's right to use and develop his property, there is a taking. That's a constitutional issue here.
But in Bigger and Teague, the entity being sued actually had authority to actually grant the permit. How does that distinction impact the analysis here?
I think the analysis is a fact-based analysis, and it has to be in a constitutional sense. It's very difficult to create per se rules when you're asked to answer the question, what is fair and just? Who bears the burden here? And creating a per se rule that says the state can factually cause a current direct restriction and have that causation not have legal merit that carries through with a taking is beyond comprehension to me.
Cite a case in which this court has held that there's inverse condemnation when the state took action but had no control. The federal government had control over issuing the final permit to make it happen.
State versus bigger. The city of Austin issued a site development plan. It wasn't a state-issued plan. It was the city of Austin's. That's what made the property valuable. The state refused to enter into a contract, an easement swap. And it did so for its own reasons. It wanted to eventually condemn the property for a lesser price on a piece of the property.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Federal government was not involved in
that. No, but the city of Austin was involved, and the city of Austin was not a party to the case. The federal government declined to give an easement swap, something it had the discretion to do, but had never, ever not done before, just like the Corps permits here. And the failure to go through with the easement swap resulted in the site development plan going away. That's what hurt the values of the property. This court allowed recovery there because the state's actions were directed.
Didn't the state deny the permit, then the city passed an ordinance that said you can't do it anyway?
No, there's a site development plan that had a time length on it, and the site development plan required that there be an easement swap. And the state used the easement swap, a contract, no threat of eminent domain there, to allow the property to lose its site development plan, resulting in a loss of value. This court has already found essentially a taking on very similar facts and bigger.
Address the state's position of having to plan for water for 25 million people, tremendous commerce, by trying to designate potential reservoir sites as directed by the legislature, and at the same time protect private property rights.
2 points about that. Number one is Chicken Little. There were 13 unique reservoir
What's
sites that were designated.
Little?
I mean, the sky is really not falling.
The water difficulties are Chicken Little?
No. The fact that they designated a site as a unique reservoir site has resulted in one case in Texas. In 5 years, this case. So the prospect of somebody bringing an inverse condemnation case just because of the unique reservoir site declaration is almost non-existent. And that's because for most property uses, what's going on in unique reservoir sites has been going on forever. Farming, drilling, houses are being bought and sold because the unique reservoir site didn't create a current direct restriction on those uses. It does on ours. So I don't think you'll see many, if any more, cases involving unique reservoir site declaration. And number two, if the Constitution is going to protect private property rights and the state has to control property into the future to protect the public and provide a water supply, the state needs to bear the burden. In fairness and justice, who should bear the burden? The property owner who's being deprived of a current right to develop his property, or the state that's going to benefit from the public project? I think the argument has to be the state needs to pay for that. And it can spread the cost amongst the 7 million people in Dallas-Fort Worth. It might cost them 50 cents extra a month for 2 years to pay for this property. It is not the end of the world.
You're not running for public office, are you? You just put forth a tax increase proposal.
No, I'm saying that you can slide it in your water bill, and the people won't know. And the people who are benefiting from Marvin Nichols Reservoir, who get to drink water and put water in their pools, they get to pay for it. That's what the Constitution requires. That's why a fairness and justice requirement is the most important part of your analysis. And we would encourage you to look at this case through that lens. It is the foundational principle in taking these cases. Thank you so much.
Thank you, counsel. The call is submitted. The court will take a brief recess.
All rise.